Ironically, of course, it's the enemy who represent family and community. It's the Trojans, not the Achaeans or the Greeks. And in some ways, the greatest hero of the poem is not the Greek hero Achilles, who becomes virtually a maniac in his fury and drowns the river Scamander with dead bodies. Rather, it's the Trojan hero, Hector. And throughout the poem, we know that Hector's going to die. There comes a moment, I think it's in book 6, where Hector comes back from battle. He's still wearing his helmet. He's still covered in gore. He comes in to look to see where his wife is, and they tell him she's up on the battlements. He goes up there, and there is Andromache holding the little baby Astyanax. And he comes up to her, and when she suggests to him maybe he should stay out of battle for a while, he says, "Look, I know that Troy is going to fall. And I know that one day all the men here, my brothers, will be slaughtered. And I know that you're going to be dragged off to Greece to be someone's slave. And I only hope that when that happens, I will be dead and in the ground, and people at least will say of me that I fought the best that I could." There is no suggestion that his heroism is going to save Troy. Rather, it is that his heroism is all the greater because he knows his duty and he will stay until the bitter end. Now, that notion, I think, was deeply embedded in the Greeks. It took hold so that at a later point in Spartan history, a Spartan by the name of Callicratidas was facing overwhelming odds on the battlefield and was told, "You should just get away while you can." And his reply was, "If I stay and die, Sparta loses nothing. If I run away and live, both Sparta and I have been dishonored." Now, that is a purely Homeric sentiment, and yet it was something that men were still trying to live by hundreds of years after Homer had stopped composing and after the poems had been written down. There's another aspect of this 8th century that I need to mention briefly. And that is that what we're seeing at the same time that these Homeric poems are being written down, as Greek culture is arriving at its masterwork so early in its history, is that there is another change going on materially, that gradually in the 8th century and then more in the 7th and the 6th, but beginning now in the 8th, we're finding that those single households, those oikoi, the households of the great men that I was talking about earlier, are getting large enough that they actually begin to coalesce. Households turn into hamlets. Hamlets turn into villages. And villages will now begin to turn into towns. What is happening at this time is that we are seeing the first steps towards the emergence of a political community which will be the characteristic form for the rest of Greek history. The polis. The city-state. It will be an area of territory, usually with some capital at the center, with cults and temples built on its outer edges in order to proclaim that this is part of their territory. But what's interesting about the Greeks is that neither these polis or city-states nor the ethnic confederations of northern Greece, the ethne or the tribal states as they're called, none of these proceeded any further and coalesced to become a nation. Now, it may seem a little anachronistic to ask why did the Greeks not proceed that far. I could be guilty of the charge of thinking in modern terms. We have nation states, why didn't they? But I think it's important to recognize how fixed the Greeks were on their separate communities. Each of these Greek states emerging in the 8th century and beyond vigorously asserts its own independence, its own autonomy. And as a result, the Greeks show no interest in ever ending their differences and forming a larger Greek nation. They do it temporarily in times of crisis, but never on anything like a permanent basis. And I think Epic is playing a role here. Because what I want to suggest to you over the course of this and the next couple of lectures is that what the Greeks had in place of a political unity was a cultural unity. There was no need for a Greek nation or a Greek state, no need for a Greek empire in the style of the Roman Empire or anything like that, because there was a Greek culture. If you spoke Greek, if you had Greek blood in your veins, if you participated in Greek institutions, you were a Greek. And at the very core of that, at the very heart of what it is to be Greek, is epic and the world of Homer. Epic becomes then a powerful statement of Greek values. And finally, I think it makes possible a kind of paradox that's at the centre of Greek history. Being Greek meant being like the other Greeks, certainly. And yet at the same time, it meant remaining completely distinct from all the other Greeks.